Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli hanging out as well. 10 o'clock is our final goodbye, so we've got plenty of time between now and then. So, super interesting to me that over the course of a week, we've gotten the two different approaches to will football be back, should football be back, and that sort of thing. I have to admit, as skeptical as I am of everything, you know, not saying that like social distancing and washing your hands and all that stuff doesn't help spread the help stop the spread of the virus. Obviously, all of that is correct. I mean, in terms of how close we are, how far away we are from vaccines and all that other kind of stuff and treatments. I guess that's the question. I know that there are reports, and a lot of it is anecdotal. It's too fresh for there to have been clinical studies and trials and stuff like that. But it seems to me that there are inroads being made on coronavirus treatments. So I wonder if that is a step, or if a vaccine is necessary. And that's like the kind of risk-reward proposition that does make a difference. So, like, for example, and I mean, I guess this could help explain the discrepancy in what Kirk Herbstreit is hearing and thinking and what the NFL is doing, right? Because if a vaccine is far off, then, you know, maybe it is, you know, treatment is what the NFL is thinking. And as long as people who get sick can be treated, that's a risk that they're willing to take. Or is it more like Kirk Herbstreit says, where you can't possibly begin things until a vaccine is created and that sort of thing? Now, for example, here, the FDA made a judgment call, right? And I think that this is relevant because it is exactly what we were talking about. The risk-reward proposition. This is from the Washington Post. The FDA authorizes widespread use of unproven drugs to treat coronavirus, saying possible benefit outweighs risk. And that was the anti-malaria drug that we were talking about before, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. Not to be confused with chloroquine phosphate, which is like that fish tank cleaner. So I guess that is the question, is like, what is the acceptable level of control? Is it a vaccine where, you know, you're not going to get the virus if you have it? Or is it treatment in the event that you do get the virus? Like, what is the acceptable level of risk for these leagues to begin play for their players? Is there another step down the road when it comes to putting fans in the seats? How does it go? Let's go to John in West Philly next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, John?
Yes. I'd like to talk about the 21st pick. I think the Eagles should trade back. I think they should trade back, get the wide receiver from Notre Dame, and second round, they should get the wide receiver from Colorado, Chenault.
Uh-huh. So Claypool and Chenault are the two that they have.
And I think they should trade Ertz in the second round for a second-round pick and get a linebacker.
Okay. You have your eye on a linebacker, too?
Yeah, I don't know if the top ones that's in the second round, but I remember I was watching the films – early films earlier today, and we was real talented when we won that championship at linebacker.
Really?
With Kendricks and all the correlation of linebackers that we had, we was real talented. So I don't see that talent at linebacker for us right now. So we need to get more better at the linebacker position.
Well, I mean, you're not going to find argument for me, John. They've been ignoring the linebacker position for a long time here, but I just don't know, based on what we've seen. Like, they don't dedicate resources to it. They never really draft. They never sign big-time free agents at linebacker. They just don't think it's that important of a position.
Yeah, but I don't think they should take Jefferson, be sold on Jefferson at 21. They should trade back, get another third or whatever kind of pick they can get, and get that boy Claiborne from Notre Dame.
Yep.
And get that boy Schnaut in the second round, because I think he's gonna fall in the second round. I don't think speed is a big issue.
Really?
Because a lot of speed wide receivers is not that good. It's a lot of speed wide receivers in the NFL. They're not that good.
Well,
you're not gonna get no Tyreek Hill coming out in this draft.
Well, I don't know if they need Tyreek Hill, but like they won a Super Bowl when they had Torrey Smith out there, and Torrey Smith wasn't any good by the time he was an Eagle either. You just need somebody to run.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but Torrey Smith, what he ran? 4.43, 4.4?
4.3, yeah.
All right, well, that boy Claiborne ran the 4.39.
Well, don't get me wrong. John, thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. Claiborne can really run. Or Claypool, rather. Yeah, Claiborne is the defensive end. Chase Claypool, yes. Okay. What did he run his 40 in?
Sub 4.4.
That dude can fly.
That's unbelievably
fast. He's huge. He's a blocker, too.
You know where he's not playing? Tight end.
You don't think he's playing tight end?
I don't.
You don't buy into that hype?
Nah, he's a wide receiver.
Chase Claypool. Yes. A Canadian from north of the border. Says his 40-yard dash is 4.42. Don't lie to me, people.
I thought he was like a 4.39. I thought he went just sub 4.
Let me see who the fastest combine receivers were. Obviously, Ruggs.
Henry Ruggs.
Obviously, but who else? You got to know by 40 time. Results tracker. 40. And we'll go to wide receivers. Okay. Henry Ruggs, 4.27. Quez Watkins, 4.35. Denzel Mims, 4.38. Devin DuVernay, Antonio Gibson. Chase Claypool, 4.42. So he was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Only 6 guys in front of him in the 40. That's really good.
Where was DuVernay in that list?
He was tied. Mims and Mooney were tied at 4.38. He was 4.39, so 5th.
Here's the thing. I am not high on Michigan offensive players.
Yeah.
But I believe that both he and Peoples-Jones will be solid picks.
Well, he's from Texas, right? Isn't he? I don't know. I think he is.
DuVernay is. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. But I apologize. I was trying to say DuVernay is a Texas guy, but I think that he and Peoples-Jones, who are like the closer to the second, third, fourth round guys,
yeah,
I think they're both going to be extremely productive.
I'm surprised Peoples-Jones ran... Not 4.48 is bad. I'm surprised he ran that slowly. He looked like he was a lot faster to me. So his game speed, I think, is better than that. I don't know, man. Donovan Peoples-Jones. Yeah, Claypool, not Claiborne. Rookie mistake. I don't know, man. I do like Justin Jefferson, though. I know that a lot of people are not huge fans. I am. Like I saw projections that it's likely that he's in the slot. I don't know that that's true. I know that there are lots of receivers that have been projected to be slot receivers that ended up being pretty good guys on the outside. He might be the guy that I fall in love with by the end of it.
Yeah, that Jarvis Landry guy is pretty darn good. That's all they ever said about him.
Yeah.
Slot receiver.
Yeah, that's true. Setting catch records and stuff. Yeah. I am looking forward to the draft. Tyler, did I hear you say earlier that you thought that the draft should be pushed back?
I do. Yeah.
Because of lack of information? Or
That particularly, yes. And again, I know that it's going to be close quarters, but I also think that there should be no contact made with the people that are inside the draft war rooms. I think it should, for the safety, for the security, and for the knowledge of all those guys inside, should be pushed back.
Just indefinitely? Or
no, I think it should probably... Because here's the thing. Indefinitely is a word that I think should be used more so for everyday life.
I see.
And the reason I say that is because I think that if you put a timeline on certain things, like this April 30th timeline, and then it gets pushed back again, that hurts a lot of people's morale.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
So that's why you use the word indefinitely, and then we just go, okay, well, when things come back, they come back.
Gotcha.
With the NFL, there is still a timeline, a schedule of the league is supposed to start on this date. That's why I think that they can say, okay, we're pushing it back 2 weeks. We're pushing it back a month.
Gotcha.
Because what the really, quite honestly, all it does, at worst, all moving the draft back does, is give you more clarity on the situation. 2 more weeks of information and technology and science, it can't do anything to hurt them. Because they're not going to do minicamp anyway.
Well, so I guess that's the pushback, is if you're not going to have rookie minicamp and you're not going to have OTAs and you're not going to have the opportunity for a standard level rookie orientation and that sort of thing, then you know maybe that's why instead they look at it and they think, well, we've got to find a way to do that. We've got to find a way to get them in as soon as possible, so not pushing back the draft is why, and at least having them huddle with their new teams as soon as they can, possibly. Let's go to Josh in Lower Merion next on the Fanatic. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I wanted good. To talk. The guy that called in and said to trade Ertz
yes.
for a second round pick. I just don't understand why that would make sense when we already know that our receivers, you know, not including tight ends, but we don't have really the receivers that we need right now. Why trade your best receiver in this for the second round when you already have 8 picks? Not to mention the fact that I don't even think he addressed, you know, picking a wide receiver in the first round. It just, to me, Ertz has so much more than second round value to this team and this quarterback. It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
I think part of it's probably that you like Goddard, right? Like if you like Goddard and you think that he's ready to take over Ertz's spot, he does it for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but you haven't proven yourself, Goddard, the way that you have, you know, Ertz. Like, you know, Ertz is probably what you'd say the third best tight end in the game right now.
Yep, that's fair.
And Goddard isn't in the top 25. So, you know, to trade, you know, one for a second round pick, I mean, I don't even know that I would trade Goddard for a second round pick, let alone Ertz.
You don't think Goddard's in the top 25? I think he's definitely in the
top. I mean, I guess he is. I guess that was just kind of like a silly statement.
But no, you really like Ertz, though. Like, and it's unproven for Goddard. The thing, and here's why, you might be talking to the wrong guy about, you know, don't trade Ertz, because the way that I look at it, Goddard has breakaway ability that Ertz doesn't have. He's got a better.
I didn't mean don't trade Ertz. I just meant just for a second round pick when you already have the number of picks that you do.
I gotcha. Okay. So you know what I mean? Like to part with him.
Yeah. Well, if someone's going to give me a number one receiver or, you know, a player that can really make an immediate impact, but there's no guarantee that a second round pick even sees the field this year or contributes whatsoever.
Right.
And you're going to trade basically your leading receiver and Carson Wentz's, you know, little buddy there for, you know, a completely unknown commodity. Not to mention you already have the picks anyway. The other thing, real quick, before you cut me off.
No, I won't cut you off.
I saw an article about this kid. Have you looked at this? I think he's a safety from Clemson, Muse or whatever.
What's his name?
His last name is Muse, M-U-S-C, and he's projected to go, I guess, somewhere in like the fourth or fifth round. He outran Hopkins, Deshaun Watson. If you look at, there's a thing of his 40 on online. I think Crossing Broad did it, where they just kind of ghosted all the other like top receivers, quarterbacks against this kid, and he's burning all of them. And apparently, he's like a late fourth, maybe fifth round option. Could be one of these guys that you convert from a safety to like a linebacker. He puts on a little bit more weight and becomes like a Nate Gary type of player. Check him out. I've never seen someone with his size run that fast.
Huh. How about that? And Josh, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. As a Clemson fan, Tanner Muse is like, he never gets the buzz or the attention as being a potential big time pro. Listed 6'3", 215. I don't know if I love his pro potential. I just don't think he turns and runs all that well.
So there was actually an unnamed NFL scout, director of scouting for an NFC team. There's some love out there for him as a cover linebacker. I could see him going late in the draft, but his safety days are over.
I thought the same thing. So
And that's why he brought up Gary, who was a safety in college as well.
Plays linebacker, exactly. Yep, and I mean, Josh is right on the money with that. The guy that I thought of when I thought of Tanner Muse is like Taylor Mays. Like, and Tanner Muse is not going to test the same way that Taylor Mays tested, but Taylor Mays, freakish measurables, was never going to be a safety in the NFL because his hips were terrible and he couldn't cover and stuff like that. Like, I wonder if those kind of drawbacks are there for Muse.
I also wonder, too, and the one name that consistently comes to my mind when you talk about the, you know, converted safety to linebacker, can do a little bit of everything, that, you know, Jack-type player, is Sua Cravens, who was by far the best positionless player that did that kind of in-the-box, out-of-the-box type thing.
Yep.
Everyone wants the next Sua Cravens. He's so impossibly hard to find.
But Jabril Peppers, I thought, was going to be it. And Jabril Peppers
has not been very great. Yeah.
He has not been it. I was sure that Jabril was going to do it. Did you like Jabril coming out? I know you don't like Michigan.
I liked Peppers as a legit special teamer.
Uh-huh.
I was curious to know if him being positionless at Michigan would hurt him. And I think it has.
Totally has. The technique is really, really raw everywhere.
Right. So he was good everywhere.
Yeah.
He was not great in one particular position.
Right. Exactly. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. I don't know about you. I think the Yannick Ngakoue dream is dead. I think that that's something that needs to go away.
If it is dead, no one's told Ngakoue yet.
Well, he's the only one keeping it alive. Like, the Jet, as far as I'm concerned, and there are very few examples to the contrary, but, you know, they do stick out in our minds. Usually teams tell you. Like, if teams are talking about it, they'll tell you what's up.
Yes.
And the Jaguars have been like, hey, we know that he doesn't want to be here long term. We like his value to this year's team. And if he's going to move on, we need what we see as good value. That is a first-round pick this year, or else he's going to play for the Jaguars.
Well, and the problem is, too, he has no leverage.
None.
If he sits out, the tag just rolls over to next year.
Correct. Yep. Or, and then if he signs it, obviously they have the tag rights there, and then he's playing for them or no.
He has to report, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I think Le'Veon Bell had, like, special stipulations being tagged multiple times.
Yes. Like, so Brandon Scherff got tagged today.
Right.
And one of the stipulations was you have to report.
Yes. You can here's what I love. The collective bargaining agreement is what it is, right? But you can negotiate whatever you want. Like, Jared Goff negotiated the most ridiculous contract, I think, in the history of the NFL.
Brilliant.
Like, way more ridiculous than anything Sam Bradford's agent ever did. But brilliant, and it's within the rules because it's negotiated. Tom Brady worked out a deal with the Patriots where he's like, if I sign this, you cannot tag me next year. And that's exactly what happened. That's why, by the way, I agree.
Gotta get that legally bound document. That's it.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. It's binding. A binding resolution. You know what movie that is? I will get a binding resolution.
You got me. I don't know.
Well, let's see if you can come up with it during the break. Tom Cruise utters the line. You have to get a binding resolution to stop me from...
My assumption is that it's probably a few good men.
Oh, man. It's not, but that's a good guess. I think that you've probably seen this movie, too.
Okay.
But we'll see. We'll see. See if you can get that, or if people on Twitter will beat you to it. Because the internet is thus far undefeated.
It's never lost.
Never lost.
That's why I always say Twitter shouldn't be free.
Can't believe this website's free. Okay. We're going to take a breather a little bit early because coming up, we've got Danny Pommels, who joined Mike Missanelli. He had some interesting things to say, obviously, about quarantine life. So we'll get to him next. And then it can be you, 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Les Grossman from Tropic Thunder, when he's yelling at Flaming Dragon, says, I'm going to head down there, and I will rain down an ungodly bleeping firestorm upon you. You're going to have to call the bleeping United Nations and get a bleeping binding resolution to keep me from bleeping destroying you. Legitimately, and I've seen Top Gun and everything, probably my favorite Tom Cruise role. When you do a lot with a little, it counts to me. All right. Speaking of doing a little, because really we're all just kind of hanging out in quarantine land. It's Joe Torti. It's Tyler Zuli. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock. Danny Pommel has joined the Mike Misnelli show to talk about how things are going in his world. And this is what it sounded like.
A proud son of Philadelphia and Temple University. So, tell us how you got to where you are.
You really want me to go that way?
No, well, yeah. I want you to get a Cliff Notes version. But you know, well, the there's a lot of people version, out there that look up to you.
You know, I can't put the cart before the horse. I wouldn't be the broadcaster I am without some tutelage from the one and only Mike Misnelli, because I interned with you.
Jenna
Wolf back in the THL 17. That's a bust out. To quote Mike
Smith,
that's a bust out.
It is a bust out, and it's a bust out because, like, I look at you now, and I have no idea that you were the intern, like, way back in the day.
I mean, why would you? You've been around the block and done so many things since then. But I used to have cornrows back then. I was more to myself, Danny Pommel, but
you were more to yourself. Now, did we get along?
I can tell so many stories about you.
Just
the way you swaggered in after your radio shift. I remember one time you and Cecil Martin went nose to nose.
Oh, we did. Well, tell me that story, because I don't remember that story. So here's the deal. So I'm the sports anchor on the nightly news, and I would do the radio show, and after the radio show, go head right to the studio, and producer who was producing at the time.
George
was great. George, my producer. All right, so you were an intern, and so you guys would put, because I didn't know anything about working the video machine, so you guys all had the video, and I would just write to the video, and then we'd just hang out until the show would start. So it was a cool chapter of my life. I really liked it. But
two quick stories.
Uh-huh.
One, I remember one time, this is when Maniac was kind of like coming into his own. So this is like 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And one time you had told George, you came into the sports office and told George that he was walking down the street with his girlfriend and you were driving by and you saw him walking. So you started heckling him from the car, but he wouldn't turn his head to see who it was because he was afraid of somebody was like really like giving him the business, but it was you giving him a hard time. But the Cecil Martin story goes that, the Eagles had lost, and there was another classic one of those games. I forget who they played, but Donovan, you know, classically started with those worm balls where he's throwing like the first five, six, seven passes at people's feet at the start of the game. You know, he had to get warmed up a little bit. So, you know, we're all Philly sports fans in a sense because we grew up in the area, but we also cover the team. So there's a bit of a dichotomy there, but you had it stuck in your head that you had to talk about that McNabb stuff from the onset because you were so tired of seeing it and it happened so many times that you wanted to get Cecil's perspective on it, and Cecil did not want to talk about it. But he was talking to the producer about how, you know, what going over the show and what was actually going to happen, and you just cut in like, nah, what we're going to talk about is McNabb and these balls that he throws to people's feet, and Cecil wouldn't want to talk about it. And this is a guy who just lost the game. He's a little, you know, flimped and overwhelmed, and you were just.
No.
I tell people all the time, like, you have always been the same. I haven't changed a bit. That's what I like.
Like, here's the thing. I hope I wasn't disrespectful, Cecil. He was a good dude. He was the Sunday night guy who would come in. But, like, I'm looking at it from, like, the viewer viewpoint. He says, everybody's thinking the same thing, man. He made some bad throws in the game. So it's like, for me to ignore it, I'm in a tough spot there because I got a player who I respect. He doesn't want to talk about it. He wasn't the one to bury his own teammate, but I've got to bring it up or I lose cred with the listener, right? Or the viewer. So yeah, I do. But he was a good dude, like that.
He was a good dude. It turned out to be not too shabby broadcaster as well.
he did pretty well. All right, so like I'm curious. Like you took a path like you from the Hunting Park section, North Philly. So where'd you go to high school, Danny?
I went to St. Joe's Prep and Bishop McDevitt. 3 years at the Prep, 1 year at McDevitt.
Okay. You're a McDevitt guy. All right, I get it.
Went to Temple University, and I thought I wanted to do news, and I did all the Chamber of Commerce meetings and the Jesse Jackson coming to town and John Street press conferences and all that stuff. And then one day, someone didn't show up for a sports assignment. It didn't have anything to do. And they said, oh, you want to go cover the game? And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, I like sports. I just never – I always thought I wanted to be a news guy. And I went to the game, and Iverson scored like 45 points. And I know you know those classic – Iverson scrums after the game. Imagine me being a novice sportscaster and in, you know, rubbing elbows with Phil Jasner and, you know, all those guys asking Iverson questions, you know, 20 deep at his locker.
Uh-huh.
And he would always play those locker games where he would take a shower and come back and change his clothes and then leave and come back. And everybody's waiting. He knows everybody's waiting to talk to him. But and I would get to go back to the station and be creative with my writing and make jokes and say, you know, Iverson had more moves than the U-Haul truck. And that creativity kind of like really appealed to me because I wasn't covering fires and murders and things like that. And the rest is history.
Well, you know, here's the reason why, you TV guys, one of the things I admire about you is that you have to pay dues and you have to go to other markets. Now, I was lucky in that I had established something. Now, all of a sudden, I find myself on TV. I felt like the luckiest guy in the world because you had to travel. Like, you had to send out tapes and get entry-level jobs. So you started out where? In Maryland?
Salisbury, Maryland. And, actual tapes. And this is back when 30th Street Station, I know I'm dating myself a bit, 30th Street Station was 24 hours, so I would find out about these jobs and print out these emails on resume sheets and all this expensive paper I couldn't afford back in the day and then send them out, mail them out to all these places, and you wouldn't hear a darn thing back. It'd just be crickets, and you'd be sending them to Pocatello, Idaho, and, you know, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and all these places. And then I finally landed at Salisbury, Maryland. Went from Salisbury, you know, covering, like, the Orioles and Maryland Eastern Shore to Harrisburg, covering Penn State and the Ravens and everything. That
well, you also went out west, didn't you?
To Sacramento.
You went to Sacramento, which is really interesting because here you are, like, you know, Salisbury, Maryland, still on the East Coast, still a familiar area, and all of a sudden you got to shoot all the way out to the West Coast, Sacramento. At that point, are you saying, well, I'm saying goodbye to Philadelphia? Did you think you would be out there, or did you always have the desire to come back here?
I never wanted to land in my hometown. I'm obviously just diehard Philly sports fan, but I never thought I was like, oh, I got to get back to Philly. But lo and behold, that's how the way it worked out. But I was in California loving it. I mean, come on, Mike, you've been to Cali. You know how beautiful it is out there. It's hard to say no, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, I don't know Sacramento. I don't know how beautiful it is out there. But, you know, Cali is beautiful.
Short so you wanna, winter, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, so you would have stayed out there.
I would have. It didn't work out that way. And I always, you know, kind of saw myself climbing the ladder. Sacramento was like market 19, uh-huh. You know, Philly's market 4.
Right.
So I definitely had the big city, you know, inclinations. Uh-huh. But I love California, man. I miss it. So maybe one day.
All right, cool. So now you get back here, you do a great job. I love your little sayings. I know you've heard me rip you for saying on the bump, right?
No, That's perfect.
Yeah.
I take a rip from you
as
like a feather in my
cap. I'm waiting for Danny on the bump.
On the slab, on the bump.
On the slab. But you also have a great way of delivering the sports, which I really like. And here's the thing, you know, because Comcast Sportsnet at the time, I think they started dressing down their people. Like they wanted to go a little more casual. And you weren't having it. You're like, nah, man, I'm going mod fit, tight fit sport coat. And you brought that back, I thought, with the tight jeans and the varietal kicks. Like, I think you brought that look back, and now everybody's going sport coat.
I'm just trying to throw some flavor out there, man. You know what I mean? Go with how I feel. But
I love it. So, in covering Philadelphia sports, what things have stuck out mostly about covering sports in this city for NBC
Come
Sports?
Come on, Network? Man. I mean, just think, you go from, you know, I was in California, you mentioned Sacramento. When I was in Sacramento was when the Phillies had lost like their 11,000th game in team history, and that narrative was just everywhere. So I'm always like curious, like especially having traveled around, how different people outside of Philly view our teams and our city. It just really is fascinating to me. But we go from that type of narrative, and then the Phillies winning the World Series, and I was banging pots and pans in Sacramento. So me being on the friggin' float with the players for the Super Bowl parade. So, I mean, that's probably the thing that sticks out to me the most is I was on the Super Bowl parade, and, you know, Brent Celek's throwing me a beer that he caught, telling me to drink up. And I'm like, nah, I'm working. I'm not going to drink. But it's just like a surreal moments like that, man, where – you know, you grow up watching, covering, enjoying the team, you know, learning from people like you and Jenna Wolf and Mike Dardis and, you know, Gary Papa, and then actually getting the chance to put some of that stuff in action. Having, you know, been in the footsteps with guys like John Clark and Kevin DeGondi at Temple and things like that, it's just very surreal, man, and I appreciate it and cherish it.
Well, that's very cool. It was glad to have you splash into my life there. I know there's some of these shows with Jenna. They were fun. Jenna was fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, she would push the envelope. You guys were just great yin and yang. And, you know, you would bring that fire from the radio and, you know, working with Anthony and whatnot, and then come in and bring that same intensity. And it just was, when you walked in the room, there was definitely a whoosh that came with it.
It was a shame only 10 people watched that news. So, but it was cool.
Hey, man,
you're
still around, though. You're still around.
I'm a survivor. Listen, man, we can't wait for you guys to get back on the air. I know this has been tough on you. How's life been going, being in isolation like this?
Trying to avoid some of the Groundhog Day vibes of these days. So, like, I just taped the Sixers Talk podcast. I have Sportsnet Central taping from home after this. I got my son's rock candy science experiment germinating in the corner. I got a 500-piece Phillies puzzle I'm trying to put together later on. You know the vibes, Mike. We're trying to make the most of it. So I'm luckier than some because I do have some space outside where we can get out and walk around and things like that and not be and keep our social distance. But just trying to continue to stay positive, man, and continue to give people content so they can enjoy this time as much as possible.
Well, that's very cool. And I also know or heard that you sing a little bit. You got some pipes. You sing at the office? Like what? How about like some?
Yeah.
How about some Instagram live tunes? How about some posted tunes?
I like to fool around. I am nobody's singer. Amy Fadul gives me a hard time about that. I do have to tell you though that you should feel very fortunate because you work with some incredible people and Natalie Eganoff and Ty Johnson because we interact all the time with the Sixers Talk show and Eagles Talk show and Eagles Outsiders and Sixers Outsiders and they just do a phenomenal job. So definitely kudos to them.
Yes, very very cool. I'm very fortunate to work with them. And so listen, man, we'll look forward to you giving back on the air. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Mike.
All right, man. There's Danny Pommels.
All right. Danny Pommels joins Mike Missanelli there. And that was a cool trip down memory lane. I guess a lot of people might not know, you know, Danny's path and everything like that. So pretty cool. Pretty cool to do that. I wonder if that's going to become like a staple. I'd be interested in that.
Like the local people's story?
Yeah. Like, what's the Tyler Zolli story? Like,
it's not that good.
I'm sure it's fantastic. All right. Holding out on us.
No, I mean, I'm still young in my career. There's only two stations. It's only a two-station stop. It's here as an intern.
Uh-huh.
A station in Lower Delaware to do news.
Uh-huh.
And it's back here.
Did you always know that you wanted to do this?
Yeah, from a pretty early age, this was it.
Yeah.
It was back and forth for a long time between, sports radio and play-by-play.
Okay.
You found a way to manage to do both.
Well, to fill the calendar.
But it was, for the most part, it was back and forth between the two.
Uh-huh.
The reason I settled more on this was because I really enjoyed the idea of my bed being in the same spot every night.
That's pretty good. Don't want to be living out of bags and hotels and stuff like that. All right. Yeah, I want to hear more about the Tyler Zolli story. Maybe I'll share the Joe Torti story. And, of course, we've also got to talk to Dave in Center City about baseball as well.
The Joe Torti story, I think my favorite one is your stop at an independent baseball team.
Yeah.
Easily my favorite story.
Yeah.
Mr. Do-It-All.
Yeah, not for long. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. It's weird because, like, I like a lot of people from that time in my life, but, like, the number of bad things that I thought about that baseball team and then for them to go under, I'm like, oh, my God, did I do that with my mind? It's the Joe Torti Show. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock. Dave, sit tight. You're going to lead us off on the other side. Right here, Tyler Zolli is producing. Plenty of action still ahead right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Our health hero of the day today was Crystal Horchuk. She's a wife and mother who makes lesson plans for her special needs twins, cares for her 21-month-old daughter, works at a registered nurse at a local ER, and makes masks for healthcare staff. Thank you, Crystal. You can check Crystal out on our health hero of the day post on our Twitter account at 97.5 The Fanatic. And during this global pandemic, there are many of us fortunate enough to stay home and out of harm's way. However, there are those like Crystal on the front lines who help keep our community a safer place day in and day out. They are doctors, nurses, educators, custodians. They are our health heroes. Is there a health hero in your life that you would like us to recognize? Go to 975thefanatic.com right now to nominate the health hero you would like us to highlight. Check out our webpage, our social media pages, and listen on air every day to see if your health hero will be highlighted. Every health hero we highlight will receive a $50 Dunkin' gift card. We are all in this together. So thank you very much to Crystal and to all of the health heroes out there doing the great work, obviously, as we're all, you know, kind of hanging out here and doing, well, in some cases, varying degrees of nothing while you're out there on the front lines and everything else. So thank you very much for that. Let's go to Dave in Center City next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Dave.
Jordy, what's going on?
How you doing, man?
Before I get down to an in-depth conversation with you in the National League East in regards to the Philadelphia Phillies, you know, with this self-imposed quarantine by a lot of us, I thought that I listened to 97.5 18 hours a day in the past, but I had many interruptions in the past where I could not listen solely. Well, right now, this is all I do. And
thank you, man.
You know, no, thank you. And the beauty of this station, we all know Mike Missinelli is the locomotive that pulls this station. And we all know that Anthony is the second locomotive that pulls the first locomotive. But let me tell you something, Tordy. I listen to the nighttime show, our weekend guys. Our whole crew is better than any of the A-teams down at the other end of the dial. It's not even close. And thank you for getting me through this, my friend.
Dave, thank you for the kind words. I'm really proud to be a small part of the team. So it's a great group of guys and girls here that we've accumulated. So thanks, Dave. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Tordy, when we do get back to real life and baseball, Vegas had Atlanta clinching this division somewhere before the 20th of September. I don't think the Washington Nationals, with the loss of a few of their players and the desire to repeat, is not going to be there. Where are the Phillies at, Tordy? We know the Cubs fleeced us with Arrieta before even these injuries pop. Where are we, Tordy, with this team?
Like in terms of where they would finish this year, Dave?
What's Harper going to do? I mean, what can we get this division locked up?
So, Dave, I don't think so. And the reason why I don't think so is even with, you know, some other teams experiencing injuries, I just don't think the Phillies have done enough to address pitching. Like, I appreciate the moves that they've made, but, you know, I don't like that Realmuto isn't locked up long term. Like, that's not something that makes me happy. Like, I don't like the fact that they signed Wheeler and that's it. I would like to see them be more aggressive in going out and spending and trying to find ways to solve the pitching problems, rather than, you know, kind of what we've seen, right, the last couple of years, hoping that Velasquez or Pivetta or Eflin or somebody else is going to all of a sudden turn a corner.
All right, so, you know, Pivetta should not be in the rotation, nor should Vince. By them being run out there again this year, people are not going to be happy with that, correct?
I think that you're right, yes.
Yeah, Tort, so where now, look, Girardi is going to look. The great Sparky Anderson said, "A manager only decides 12 games out of 162. He hasn't. That's not a lot, Tort.
No,
that's okay. But if he makes the right decisions in those 12 games, and this was back before there were wild cards, that should be enough to decide if your team can win the division or not, unless you're the old Montreal Expos. Girardi's going to be good for 6 or 7 more wins this year. Agreed?
I would think that's probably right, yes.
So you're not feeling the Phillies this year.
Sorry, Dave. I can't jump on board quite yet. I can't.
Torty, take it easy, my brother.
Likewise, man. Stay safe, Dave. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I don't think they've done enough. I don't like this stupid money and finally going to act like a big market team and stuff like that, and then they don't. Like, I believe it or not, I actually understand the negotiations early on with Real Muto because, like, it's a bargaining situation. Like, you're supposed to battle for every dollar, and then you go to arbitration, and then that gets worked out, and then you just work out a long-term deal anyway, so you show the work that you tried to get the best deal that you could for your team while still taking care of things. I don't like the way that they've conducted themselves here in the last 12 months.
There is a very real chance that if baseball does not get played this year, that JT Realmuto has played his last game as a Philly, and Didi Gregorius never plays a game as a Philly.
That's possible.
That is scary to me. Because I don't know if they have enough to restock internally if both were to leave. In fact, I know they don't have enough internally to restock if Realmuto were to leave. Like, I like Devi Gurion a lot. He is not Realmuto.
I mean, that's the best catcher in baseball, right?
Yeah.
Like, you made that move not for 1 year. Like, that's where I have a problem now with that is, like, okay, you went through the process, right? You had to show that you were going to go to arbitrate. Like, I understand the politics of how all that works. Now it's penny pinching. Like, the fact that now you don't have a long-term contract worked out where, by the way, he has said that he wants to be a Philly long-term. Nothing. I don't like that. I don't like the fact that they seemed to sign Wheeler to a big deal and then were just like, okay, that's enough. We made our big splash signing, so now people can get off of our backs and not say that we did nothing. I don't like that at all. They got Joe Girardi, who I think is a massive improvement. In fact, when Gabe Kapler was hired the first time, I argued that Joe Girardi should absolutely have been interviewed that time before they hired Gabe Kapler. I don't know, man. Like, I think that they didn't do enough.
Now, that last statement that you made, I disagree with. And in fact, I was pretty emphatic that they should not have hired Girardi the first time around because I wanted to see something entirely different. And when you get entirely different, it can go one of two ways.
Mm-hmm.
It went the wrong way. But they did what I had asked them to do. And after I saw 2 years of Kapler, I knew that Girardi had to be the guy this time to kind of bring it back, let that pendulum swing back the other way.
So, do you think it's an overreaction hire? Not saying that Girardi's bad.
No. This is the exact right hire. I mean, because outside, you know, with the other names that were around, I think Buck Showalter is a tremendous manager. I think his days as a top flight manager are done. There was nobody else to me that would rival Girardi in terms of veteran presence and someone that could use analytics the right way. Because Joe Maddon is so far on the analytic train too.
Right.
That it would have just been getting veteran Gabe Kapler. A guy that it would have just been getting a guy that had actual managing experience. Right. That's all that would have been. So Girardi was the perfect move. I just don't know if a guy that's probably a back end 2, front line 3, signing him to a ridiculous contract is enough to put this team over the hump.
Well, the thing that makes, and maybe I'm being harsh on that signing, right? Because he's,
I don't think you are.
Well, so I'm trying to give Wheeler the benefit of the doubt. He brought up, now I thought that Gerrit Cole was a one the whole way. Depending on how good of a one he was, that's up for debate. But I thought even in Pittsburgh, he was probably a one pitcher. Agree?
Oh, he's been a one his entire career.
The whole time, yeah. Right? But he just took another step forward with the Astros. You know,
there's a difference between one and ace, by the way.
Right. He turned into an ace.
There are a couple of really good ones. Like Aaron Nola's a one.
Yeah, definitely a one.
I don't think he's an ace.
Agreed. We're on the same page there. So Wheeler said, it's possible that I take that Gerrit Cole step, where I come here and I figure some stuff out, and maybe then, maybe they just predict that he's going to have that big step. I don't know.
So then you've got a legit one and a back end one, front line two.
It's not bad.
Which really is not bad, no.
But my problem is, if that's the case, why not Corbin last year? If Corbin was in a similar spot, let's say, not the same, but similar spot to Wheeler, and he balled out for the Nationals last year, and that was predictable for at least one team, right? Because the Nationals paid him. Like, I don't know why the shift in philosophy last year to this year.
I don't even think it had to be Corbin last year. If you're going to spend the money on Harper, then you spend the money on Harper. But I think the middle of the season, it should have been Keuchel 2-year deal and then parlay that with Wheeler. And then Arrieta's your four.
Oh, man.
And if Keuchel's not any good, like Keuchel had a nice year last year for the Braves, if he's not any good this season, then you cut your ties.
Right. Well,
but it was only a 2-year deal.
It was
just money at that point.
I'm so sad that we just brought up Dallas Keuchel to relitigate that, because that was so obvious. That was the most obvious thing the Phillies could have possibly done. Don't have any lefties. Keuchel, low risk, former Cy Young winner, blah, blah, blah. Now, a lot of people saw Arrieta 2.0 in that signing. Maybe, but like you said, if you get one good year out of them, I just don't know. I don't know if they had one more or two more good starting pitchers last year, how different the season is. I would say probably very, even with all of the injuries and stuff. Probably very different.
So the question then at that point is, if you're looking outside of, you know, the Coles and the Corbins and moving on with Wheeler plus more, the Texas Rangers traded Emmanuel Clase and DeLeiner DeShields for Corey Kluber.
Okay, yep.
Would you have, in your opinion, especially right, knowing that they signed Gregorius,
right,
would you have traded, let's try to put this into perspective.
I know,
you,
what's the
would
equivalent?
You have traded Kingery and Spencer Howard for Corey Kluber?
Kluber? Probably. I probably would have.
Because DeShields has, I mean, he's got 1,600 career at-bats. And I know that Kingery doesn't have that, but they're pretty similar type players.
Well, so the thing about King, the reason that I'm skeptical on Kingery is he hasn't forced you to keep him in the lineup and anywhere. Like, I don't know how much better he is than Ben Zobrist, long-term.
But if he's Ben Zobrist, that's fine. Ben Zobrist is a nice player.
But you would trade Ben Zobrist in a package
for Kluber.
Kluber.
Yes.
You know, so that's...
Here's my only thing with Kingery is, being bounced around as much as he is, I am, you know me, I'm a trade everybody for the proven guy. Kingery is a specifically weird scenario where I'm willing to give him a season at second base.
Okay.
And consistently played at second base to figure this out. Now, I know that he is going to be the opening day third baseman, probably, if it's not Segura. One of the two of them are,
right,
you know, are playing third. It's going to be weird either way. But if Kingery can consistently be the everyday second baseman, I would actually give him some kind of, like, amnesty clause into being not traded.
Not, okay. Give him some protection. 610-632-0975. Final hour coming your way next. It is the Joe Torti Show. Tyler Zuli was the voice that you just heard right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.